Good evening and welcome to Sports Takeover. You are listening to RMU Radio. I'm Matt, with me is Chris, and we have a lot to cover, so let's get to it. College football is now getting into the thick of things. We have some better matchups taking place. There were some shakeups to the top 25 this week, Chris.
Yeah, eight teams finally lost in the top 25, the most we've seen this season. We've been waiting for this moment. We knew it was coming. It took a few weeks, but we got there. Now, three of the games were ranked matchups featuring ranked teams playing against each other, so them losing was inevitable. But five other teams decided to lose for the fun of it, too. USC upset number 10 Utah before the weekend. That was Friday night, led by their third-string quarterback. So their starter going into the season, JT Daniels, he was injured in the first game. He was done. I believe freshman Max Slovis came in. He played decently well for USC. Well, he also is injured now, so they had to bring their third-string in, who was a junior. He's been with the team, knows the system, and clearly knew it well enough to lead the upset over Utah.
I still can't believe that this team is fighting. They're now ranked. They're 21st in the most recent AP polls.
Yeah, they've been bouncing in and out.
This was a team that I thought was done as soon as the starter went down. I mean, especially playing against the number 10 Utah team. Certainly a close game, but they're still a team that's taken me by surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Pac-12 has seemed like every year they always have a lot of people or a lot of teams between like the 10th and 20th position. This year we've seen Washington State, Washington, Utah, all within that range. And funny enough, and Oregon too, all those teams that have been within that range have actually fallen out of that range. USC has been in and out of the lower 20s, but it just seems like there's consistent cycling around in the Pac-12. Cal is now undefeated. They're 15th, but I'm sure some week they'll find their way to fall back out. Moving into the SEC, the big game of the week really was Georgia and Notre Dame. It was a top 10 matchup, second one we've had this year, but like the first true one where you knew that both these teams were very strong, very good teams, and they both played very well. Georgia held off Notre Dame. It was close. It was 23-17. It was in Georgia, but Notre Dame played a very good game.
Yeah, they did. Like you said, very close game, one-score game. Notre Dame kind of made it a little bit closer late after Georgia found themselves up two scores. Couldn't quite find what they needed to get the game tied or get it to overtime or whatever, get the lead. So they dropped to number 10. Georgia received a first-place vote in this week's poll. They remain at number 3 behind, obviously, Alabama and Clemson, but certainly this makes a strong case for a team that felt like they should have been in the playoff last year.
Yeah, Notre Dame was 7th going to this game, so falling to 10th is not that big of a drop-off. And, losses aren't good, but it was a very good loss. Whoever won this game, it was going to be a great resume builder. Either team that would have won, I think, would have, if it hadn't been Notre Dame, they probably would have jumped into the top four, which, you know, people consider to be the college football playoff as it currently stands. Right. Georgia would have fallen out, but Georgia was able to hold on, mostly because it was at home. Auburn, another top 10 team in the SEC, they played a very strong game. They walked to College Station, played Texas A&M, and basically said, all right, Texas A&M, you have the one of the most hostile home environments. We are just going to say, screw it. We're Auburn. We're going to dominate you. It was 28-20 was the final score, but it was a lot more one-sided than the score indicates.
Yeah, we both had A&M in this game, correct?
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, so we had a little bit more faith in number 17. They dropped a 2-2 on the season, neither loss being a bad loss, but it's still two losses. They fall to number 23 in the country. Auburn gets from 8-7, not a big jump, but they take Notre Dame's place.
It's so hard for people to jump in the top eight because teams just aren't losing currently. But Auburn now has two extremely good wins. They beat Oregon in the first week. That was, I believe it was a top 10 or top 15 at least matchup.
Top 15, I think.
Yeah, they were both somewhere around 10, somewhere in that range. But Auburn won that first game, and now they beat Texas A&M, which, granted, they weren't a top 10 team, but they were still, you know, a contender in the SEC.
It's a respectable win.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, Texas A&M season is effectively done now. Two losses, there's not really any chance. But Auburn has just been rolling against difficult teams, and it's, what really gets it for me is that they went to College Station, which is not the easiest place, with a true freshman starting quarterback, and nothing really affected him. They played a very good ball game.
Yes, Auburn, one of the many SEC teams making some noise early
in the
season.
In the mix of
the
top 10. Yep. And a team that is not making noise, well, is making noise, actually, but for all the wrong reasons. It seems like it's the same story, just a different year. It's Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverines. Consistently, they just can't win important games. This week, they played Wisconsin. They traveled on the road to Wisconsin. It was supposed to be their big shining moment. They were ranked 11. They were a team who was, them and Ohio State basically were the two teams that people picked for the Big Ten, mostly Ohio State, but Michigan got some love. Well, whenever you lose 35-14 on the road to Wisconsin, you're going to receive no love, and rightfully so. Michigan dropped from 11th all the way to 20th. Wisconsin, on the flip side, goes from 13-8. But man, it's just the same story. Jim Harbaugh cannot coach Michigan over teams that are just better than him. It's just not the way it is.
Yeah, I picked Wisconsin in this game, and even I'm surprised by what the final ended up being. I thought this would be a very competitive game, a one-score game the whole way through, and Wisconsin really had this thing under control by halftime. Michigan,
even before halftime.
Oh, yeah. Michigan dug themselves a very deep hole and weren't even close to fighting their way out of it. You said they dropped the whole way to number 20. I mean, it's hard to see Michigan bouncing back from this. Certainly a lot of football to be played and lots of games in the Big Ten that a team like Ohio State or Penn State or whoever else is ahead of them could lose. But
Iowa's ahead of them as well.
Yeah, but this is not the type of game Michigan could afford to lose, especially not in this fashion.
Yeah, and it's just Harbaugh has had the same story. So there's a lot of great stats here I have for you about Harbaugh against good teams. He's 4-11. This is all with Michigan. 4-11 against top 15 teams. 1-9 versus top 10 teams. 1-6 on the road against ranked teams. And 0-7 anytime Michigan is the underdog. It's year five now for Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. There's no more, okay, you know, we're going to wait for his players, his coaches to develop. No, they are where they're supposed to be. But they're just not doing what they need to be doing. They were supposed to bring Harbaugh in, win a national championship was the ultimate goal. And I think Harbaugh is a very good coach. I think there's a strong reason they brought him in. He was excellent at Stanford, excellent with the 49ers. Yet with Michigan, it seems like he keeps taking a step back every year instead of moving forward.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing to keep in mind is he did bring this program back to relevance. I mean, they're not getting over that hump and getting to the playoff or anything like that, but there are a lot of schools out there and a lot of football programs that would take number 20 in the country. But for Michigan, that may
not
necessarily be, yeah, it's not the standard. So, but it also comes down to finding somebody who's as good as or better than Jim Harbaugh, and that's not going to be the easiest thing to do.
Right. But, yeah. I mean, you can't exactly just get rid of the guy and find, I think the only guy that's available right now is Urban Meyer, but I don't think Urban Meyer will come out of retirement to go coach at Michigan after he had been Ohio State.
I think that'd be a very unpopular thing of him to do in certain regions.
So if you're Michigan, you're in a tough situation where Harbaugh's not getting it done, but where do you go from here? I mean, it's not exactly like it's a, you know, an NFL team that can take 2 years to rebuild or whatever. I mean, it's college. You're consistently getting new players in and out every year. If you get rid of Harbaugh, any five-star commits, you can pretty much guarantee they're not going to want to go there, because for as little success as he's brought Michigan, he does bring in the players. He brings in the fans, the money and stuff. He just doesn't bring the results in.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that's disappointing for Michigan is, you know, you can look at this game as a bad loss. Well, not a bad loss in terms of who you lost to, but a game that you didn't show up for against a team that you needed to. But they've also been tumbling down the standings because their wins haven't been convincing or because teams behind them have made a bigger impact. You know, I think they started the season at number 7.
Yeah, they were top 10.
And now they've worked their way down to number 11, and now the whole way down to 20 with this loss. So you've effectively dropped 13 places in 4 weeks.
Well, they've had the double overtime win against Army, too.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's more than just this game. If you looked at this game, if they're at number 7, they lose this game in this fashion, maybe they're at 11 now. But they've already started to take that tumble, and that is even more concerning, I think.
And when you look at them in recent close games, last year they let Ohio State run up the score and put 62 on them. This one they lost by 3 touchdowns and was never remotely close. I mean, whenever you think of Michigan in big games, it's always just big outcomes. It's never like a 3-point game or anything, or like a 7-point game that's given a close gap. It's always them just getting absolutely dominated. So it's hard to say where they're going to go from here. In the Peach Bowl they played last year against Florida, 41-15. I mean, that's the last 3 important games they've played, and they've shown up in none of them. So pretty much the end of Michigan as far as we see it this year. I'm sure they'll make a splash by knocking off somebody else, but their chances, I think, are pretty much over. Another team's chances who are over, who most didn't necessarily think they were ever existing, but people like me held out hope, UCF. They lost to the Pittsburgh Panthers on a fourth quarter, fourth down trick play to give UCF their first regular season loss in 27 games, which, not like I said, people didn't have them in the college football playoff picture, but obviously they have no chance at being there now. They were 15th. They fell to 22nd.
Yeah, this is a team that I never had a whole lot of faith in, as you know, as we've talked about on the show.
Many times last year.
I certainly thought that they would take care of Pitt, but, I mean, I think the fact that they didn't like you said, effectively ends any hopes that they had of going to a significant bowl game. I mean, will they hang around in the top 25? Probably. But, yeah, as far as them making any claims to being national champions, they can kiss that dream goodbye for this year.
Yeah, but it's really remarkable that going on 27 straight
regular
season
yeah.
games. I mean, that's basically 2.5 full seasons of not losing the regular season.
They still need to play some better opponents, and they just scheduled a couple for the next few years.
They did play Stanford the other week.
Sure.
But, I mean, in general, their schedule is not the strongest. Some right. years, Cincinnati and Houston make splashes in the top 25, which helps them out. But, yeah, in general, they don't play the strongest of teams. But Pitt only lost to Penn State by 7 and probably should have won had they had better coaching. Well, I don't know if the coaching was any better this week, but regardless, they got the job done. So Pitt likes to make a splash against ranked teams. They beat Clemson. They've beaten Miami. They beat teams that are of prominence for whatever reason and decide to be mediocre against bad teams. But I guess that's the Pitt way. Either way, end of UCF season. Another fun game that doesn't really have too many implications, but it's just had a lot going on. UCLA and Washington State. So they combined for 130 points. The score was 67-63 UCLA. And this all happened in regulation. Washington State was up 49-17 in the third quarter. It's a 32-point game, and they just let UCLA storm back. Washington State's quarterback, Anthony Gordon, set pretty much every school passing record in a single game you could. He was 41-61, 570 yards, 9 touchdown passes. The man threw 9 touchdown passes, and they still managed to lose to the Chip Kelly-led UCLA Bruins. That was just a wild one.
They scored 50 points in the second half. 50 points in the second half. That's a crazy game. Number 19, Washington State, coming up on the short end. Not the only top 25 team to do that. Obviously, we've mentioned some, but number 25, TCU, their stay in the top 25 was very short. They lost 41-38 to SMU.
I got a fun fact about that one. So that's a rivalry. Did you know that they play every year? Any guesses on what their, you know, how rivalries have nicknames or whatever?
Oh, boy. No.
The Battle for the Iron Skillet. SMU and TCU, battle for the Iron Skillet. They actually have a real Iron Skillet they battle for.
Okay.
But SMU, they're 4-0. That's their first 4-0 start since 1984. Are they back to the prominence they had in the 80s? Well, let's not get too carried away. But it is a very good start for a football team that has not made a lot of noise in recent years. So good for them, and TCU dropping out as well, like you said.
Number 24, Arizona State, also drops out. They lose 34-31 to Colorado, who has dropped out at times this year in their own right. Apparently, they wanted to fall out of the top 25 before they came back to beat somebody in the top 25. Kind of an odd back-and-forth type of season for Colorado. Arizona State has taken a bit of a tumble now.
Yeah, it's the same bottom five shuffle we talked about all last year.
Oh, yeah.
You'll see teams. Arizona State, I'm sure, will be back in. Colorado, probably back in. SMU, if they keep winning, they'll make an appearance in the bottom there. So the bottom will continue to be turbulent. Michigan State re-entered this week. Kansas State entered for the first time, and USC also came back in. Those were the three new entries. Everybody else just shifted around.
First team out is Wake Forest.
Yeah, Wake Forest, the Demon Deacons. You know who my favorite Wake Forest player of all time is? Tim Duncan. He played basketball too, so not even extremely relevant, but he went to Wake Forest. So
all right, there we go.
It's good news. That was this week in college football. Next week, not too sure if we'll get the same results, but boy, I hope so. It's really exciting when stuff of this nature happens.
You are correct about that.
Moving forward, the NFL, week 3 is down, and there are a lot of good teams still, but I'm going to start with a lot of bad teams first. So there are 9 new coaches, I believe, 8 or 9 new coaches this season. Their combined record is 5-18-1. 5 of them have yet to have a win. Matt LaFleur with the Packers has 3 wins, so if you take him out of the equation, there are only 2 wins amongst the rest of the coaches. That's not good.
Yeah, Matt LaFleur has more wins than the rest of the new coaches do combined. Freddie Kitchens is 1-2 with the Cleveland Browns. Bruce Arians is 1-2 with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. After that, it's losses in Miami, losses in Denver, losses with the Jets, losses in Cincinnati, 2 losses and a tie in Arizona.
Yeah, if Cliff Kingsbury has the tie to his name, but we talked about this, I believe, last year, maybe at this point, maybe a week later, but these new coaches need to start getting some better results than they're seeing. It's hard to convince your team. I mean, Green Bay looks very good. They look like they are a Super Bowl contender, which with a first-year coach is probably more than you could expect, especially with the recent lack of success they've had the last few seasons too.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of these teams, they're struggling to find wins. A lot of them I don't think have high expectations anyway. Vic Fangio in Denver is one that I certainly thought would have a win at this point. They've been competitive in some games, but they're going to have to find a way to get in the win column soon. Tampa Bay sitting at 1-2. I mean, that's pretty accurate, I think. Bruce Arians is a good football coach. Tampa Bay is not a good football team, so he's only going to be able to do so much with that.
Right.
Freddie Kitchens in Cleveland. I had the Cleveland Browns at 10-6, but I had them struggling early. I think their schedule gets easier for them in the second half. So
I mean, the Rams was pretty much a loss.
Yeah, and to me, as long as the Browns can kind of hang in there for the first half of the season, I think they can make some noise in the second half. So seeing them at 1-2 doesn't concern me so much. It's just that offense needs to get better.
But what does concern me, though, is, like you said, their offense needs to get better, and their offense was supposed to be explosive.
Right.
The biggest thing about me, so they lost the Rams 20-13 Sunday night. It was a very competitive game. It was close throughout. They were up 6-3 at halftime. At one point, they were up, I believe, 13-7. It was very close throughout the entirety of the game. The Rams obviously stormed ahead in the fourth, but there was a 4th-and-9 play the Browns had in the fourth quarter. And whoever the mastermind that's not named Todd Haley anymore because he's gone, he drew up a draw play. In what circumstance does 4th-and-9 merit a draw play? Unless your name is James Franklin, but we're not going to go back to that. That's old wounds. But still, you're playing the Rams, who are a Super Bowl contender. That is easy to say. They have a good offense, not as good of a defense, but it's still good enough. Obviously, they gave up 13 points to the high-power Browns offense, which is anything but. And Baker Mayfield is a guy that you want to be throwing the ball on fourth down to either Odell Beckham or Jarvis Landry. Yet Nick Chubb had the ball on a draw play to run 9 yards, to which Sean McVay and the Rams defense said, "Thank you for running right at us. We will let you get 5 yards," and that's all she wrote. It just doesn't make sense to me.
No, and I've never been crazy about the head coach being the play caller, which is what Freddie Kitchens is doing. And based on what I've seen, Freddie Kitchens has never been a play caller. I think he's sort of trying to figure this thing out on the fly. And I mean, I guess, like I said, I think their schedule is more difficult at the beginning, so you can make the argument that he's got time to adjust and figure it out, but they have an offensive coordinator. I personally think it would be in their better interest to let him do the play calling and let Freddie Kitchens do whatever else it is that he needs to do. But for now, he's trying to work out this offense just like the personnel is trying to work out the offense, and it shows.
And tight end David Njoku was out for,
which does not help,
a considerable amount of time too, which takes, he was a good piece that actually had established a relationship with Baker Mayfield already, so that's a shame for them. Their one of the other losses was to Tennessee, who after week 3, Tennessee does not look like a very good football team. But one interesting thing that Steve Smith, former receiver for the Ravens, analyst now on NFL Network, brought up, I liked it a lot. The Titans have had 3 different offensive coordinators, so how is Marcus Mariota supposed to get accustomed to any kind of system when every time he goes out there every year, it's a new system to learn? So the Titans stole the week 1 win against the Browns, but since then they've looked bad, so that makes that loss the Browns took it to them look even worse.
Yeah, especially when it was a 30-point loss that Cleveland suffered.
It was a blowout
at home. But yeah, you talked about the continuity. There has to be more of it, I think, across the board in the NFL. And Cleveland is a team that knows that all too well, I think, with the number of general managers and head coaches that they've had. They showed a graphic the other night. They showed a graphic the other night on Sunday Night Football about coach and quarterback combinations that they've had since they came back into the league in 99. I don't remember what the number was, but it was a lot bigger than it needed to be. It's just one of those that there's no, everybody is in such a win now mentality that the idea of, you know, actually doing a rebuild, going through a rebuild and coming out on the other side of it as a contender, you don't seem to see that anymore. Everybody wants to win now. That's why you see a team like the Browns, who have fallen victim to that, struggle for such a long period of time. And even look at last year, their interim head coach, Greg Williams, isn't even on the sideline for them anymore.
He's not a Jets, right? He's a defensive coordinator.
I believe so. So you finally turn things around with that coach, and you decide, not only are we not going to send you back to offensive coordinator, we're not going to keep you as the head coach, and we're not going to keep you at all. And that just seems like a weird thing to do. A little bit off the point that you were making, but you just have to see more continuity throughout the league.
Absolutely. A team that is showing extreme continuity is the Miami Dolphins. They dropped to 0-3. They've put up no fight in any game. But the team that beat them this week was the Dallas Cowboys, who they are just clicking on all cylinders. Dak Prescott looks very good. Ezekiel Elliott looks just as good as I remember him. And Amari Cooper looks like the best first-round draft pick trade we've seen in a long time. There's very little wrong with the Cowboys right now.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see what it takes to derail them a little bit. I know they have a matchup with the Saints coming up this week. That's one that I could see maybe doing it for them, or at least we'll see a good test, because the Saints obviously have set the standard in the NFC for a lot of years now, and they came out with a big win in Seattle this past weekend. So that'll be a game that I think we'll really get to see, one, where this 3-0 Cowboys team is against another team that's in contention for a Super Bowl in the NFC, and we get to see from the Saints side of things how backup quarterback Teddy Bridgewater handles a game against a 3-0 Dallas Cowboys team. So that game, I think, is going to be very telling.
Yeah, that you make a lot of good points there. The Dallas defense, it's not fantastic, but it is good. I mean, it
gets the job done.
It's a top 10 defense. I believe last year they were even top 5. I just say top 10 now because after 3 weeks, it's hard to put teams in certain places,
sure,
especially with how many undefeated teams we have. But their defense is good. So if Bridgewater can't do anything about it, Dallas is a legitimate Super Bowl contender. However, if Teddy Bridgewater is able to, you know, find some holes or whatever, and New Orleans is able to come out with a win, well, maybe Dallas still has a step or two they need to take before they head down the Super Bowl path. Another team that's undefeated, which I don't think will be making any Super Bowl news, but I'm sure is making a lot of people in New York happy, is the Buffalo Bills. Somehow they are 3-0. Josh Allen continues to get the job done, not conventionally, but regardless, he has led the Bills to a 3-0 record. It's really an interesting start to their season.
Yeah, I would question a little bit who they've played to this point, or at least the margin by which they've beat those teams. But certainly 3-0 is 3-0. I think they have good coaching. I think they have good personnel on both sides of the ball.
Their defense is good.
Yeah, it was top 5 last year.
Yeah, it was
very good
last year. Their offense was just bad.
And you figure this is a playoff team 2 years ago, right? At 9-7?
Yes, they were a wild
card
team.
So there is certainly potential here for this team to maybe be for real in the sense that they'll be competing for a playoff spot. I don't expect them to compete for the division.
Obviously
certainly
not
for a Super Bowl, but I think it's a team that's trending in the right direction.
Well, for as many teams in the AFC that have been underperforming this season, the Bills starting off 3-0, certainly getting those 3 wins out of the way now makes it a lot easier down the line when, you know, 6 or 7 more wins might be all you need. There's no LeSean McCoy on this team anymore either, which most people would say, oh, you remove LeSean McCoy, well, where's your run game? Well, it's with a rookie Singletary from Florida and Frank Gore, proven veteran in the league, and they're getting it done. And Josh Allen still has wheels for some reason. I still can't get over a quarterback from Wyoming who throws the ball 60 yards, runs as much as he does, but they are getting the job done. They are getting the wins. I will put it in perspective, though. Last season, the Miami Dolphins also began 3-0. They did not end anywhere remotely close to
the playoffs. Well, they ended 7-9.
Yeah, but they weren't really that.
I think this Bills team is better on paper than that Dolphins team was. And if that small margin on paper gets them an extra 2 wins, they're in that conversation.
I agree. They are better on paper, but they still have 2 times against the Patriots.
Sure.
Pretty much the whole division except for the Jets. So a lot up in the air for them. NFC West is looking really good besides Arizona, who we expected to be bad. Seattle's 2-1. You're not so sold on them. Look, they only lost to New Orleans by 6 points, which was not a bad loss.
Garbage time touchdown, but yes, still a close game.
They beat the Steelers. It was a close game. They beat the Bengals. It was a close game. But Russell Wilson looks like Russell Wilson looks. It's very good for him. But they're only 3rd place in their division because the 49ers and the Rams are both 3-0 currently. And the 49ers look as good as you thought they were looking into the season. I was not very high on them. I was not convinced that Jimmy Garoppolo would be able to help them, but I guess I can say I'm wrong at this point. He has been very good, and their run game has been even better.
So just to hit on Seattle quick, I have no doubts in Russell Wilson. He looks good. He's a Super Bowl champion quarterback. I have faith in Russell Wilson 100%. Tyler Lockett's a great weapon for him. They have some weapons in the run game, but I don't trust the defense, which is what they've banked on for their success in recent years. And the fact that that's gone now, I mean, the home field advantage is still there, but I don't think
it's a little bit less of
playing the Seahawks doesn't mean the same thing as it used to, and that means the same for in their building. It's not what it used to be. As far as the San Francisco 49ers, and I'll even throw the Detroit Lions in this conversation at 2-0-1, those are the 2 teams I had making the wild card spots in the NFC, and they're both off to better starts than I thought they were going to be. So I'm really excited about these 2 teams. I think they're solid teams. The Niners last year were 4-12, but were pretty average statistically without, you know, a running back, without a starting quarterback. They've added weapons on defense and a guy like Kwon Alexander.
That was a good move.
To me, this is a team that their record didn't do them justice last year, and they've added pieces since then.
Richard Sherman's still there.
Yeah, which is a great cornerback to have. And for the Lions, I think it's a team that's really solid on the defensive side of the ball. They showed that last year. Offensively, they've made a lot of upgrades, and these are two teams that I'm really excited about moving forward.
I think this past week really shows the character of these teams as well. The Niners beat the Steelers, who they're bad this season, as painful as to say. As it currently stands, the Steelers are a very bad team. But traditionally, they're a good team. They played very well defensively. I mean, they forced 5 turnovers in the game.
That's what I was going to talk about. For the 49ers to give up the ball 5 times, credit to that defense. Regardless of how poorly the Steelers may have called plays or executed plays on offense, which we've both ranted about plenty of times in the past and will again, still credit to the San Francisco defense for hanging in there and the offense for cashing in on drives where they didn't turn the ball over.
And then moving to the Lions, they go to Philadelphia, play the Eagles, and really just controlled the game mostly. This is a Eagles team that is two years removed from the Super Bowl. Three? Yeah.
Two.
Yeah, 2 years removed from winning a Super Bowl. Still have Carson Wentz at the helm, and they now fall to 1-2 in the season. And they lost to the Lions. The Lions are a team that are consistently predicted 6 wins. Some years they make it up to 10, but I'd say 6 is usually their average range. 7 maybe. Matt Stafford is good, but the pieces around him have been pretty questionable since Calvin Johnson's gone. Marvin Jones this week, 6 catches for 100 yards and a touchdown. That was pretty good. Golden Tate's no longer there. Yet they got the job done so far. Matt Patricia, prodigy of Bill Belichick, like so many other coaches in the league, we've seen over the last 20 years now, we can say, have gone on to lead teams to success, and he is another one. They should be 3-0 because the game against the Cardinals week 1, they blew, which if you look at them at 3-0, that's even more remarkable, but they're 2-0-1 and they're looking very good.
Yeah, that first week made me a little bit nervous with as high as I was on them and then seeing them blow that lead to Kyler Murray. But in the last 2 games, holding a Chargers Philip River-led offense to 10 points, says a lot about your defense. Even though the offense only scores 13, that says a lot about your defense. And then to come into Philadelphia and take down a team that I also think very highly of, I think says a lot. And if Dallas continues to do what they're doing and Philadelphia bounces back a little bit, there's the very real potential that that game and that win for Detroit has huge implications for the playoffs and potentially for a wild card spot.
Absolutely, especially because the Eagles are a team they're in direct competition with for that wild card spot. The Eagles were a little bit maligned this week, though. Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson, right. Receivers 1 and 2, did not play. But
I still think that's a good defense, though, that they put 27 up against. That's not a Cardinals defense, that's an Eagles defense. Absolutely. So I think that says something.
And Carson Wentz looked bad this week. 19 for 36 was not good. They had some butterfingers on the team. Nelson Aguilar could not catch the ball, and even when he did catch the ball, he threw a fumble in there for fun. Miles Sanders fumbled twice. Only one was lost, but still, they're coughing the ball up left and right. Carson Wentz is only completing half of his passes. He was sacked 3 times. Matthew Stafford was not sacked once. These are just, it's the little things like this that add up over the course of the season that really are the big difference between your team having 7 wins and your team having 9 wins, which in most cases are the difference between playoff teams. Quick note about the Patriots. They dominate every team they play. The Jets put up 14, but that's because one was a pick 6 and one was a fumble in a punt return. The Patriots defense has not given up a true touchdown yet. Tom Brady looks at not a day over 25. Is there anything else you want to say about them?
I think they're going to be tested in Buffalo. I really do.
Really?
I really do. Like I said, the thing I question with Buffalo is how much they've beat the opponents that they've played. I mean, some weaker teams they haven't totally dominated, but I mean, not that it happens often, but Buffalo has been a pain in the Patriots' side from time to time, and I would argue that this is one of the best Bills teams we've seen in recent years.
It is, you're right.
Not that this Patriots team isn't good as well.
That's excellent.
But, I mean, I think one of the scariest things about this team was the passing game offensively. Not that losing Antonio Brown is losing the entire passing game, but that's one less weapon that they have that I think makes them slightly more human, so I think they will get tested this week.
However, if they blow out Buffalo, well, then it's over for the NFL once again as far as the Patriots go. We bounced around to a lot of teams. 2 teams we have yet to mention with 2 quarterbacks who made dazzling debuts. I'm going to start with the Carolina Panthers. Kyle Allen, backup to Cam Newton out of Texas A&M. Never heard of him going into this week. He also transferred to Houston too. So he played on the same team that Kyler Murray played on at Texas A&M. Both of them transferred out. They met back up this week. and Kyle Allen shined. He was 19 for 26, very efficient, 261 yards, not a tremendous amount, but when you consider he threw four touchdown passes and helped get Christian McCaffrey looking like Christian McCaffrey, it's good news for Carolina.
He looked more impressive in one game than Cam Newton has maybe in the last season and a half.
I would agree with that.
I mean, he was really good, and I thought the Cardinals would find a way to take this one because Cam Newton was not playing. Again, not that he's been fantastic, but he still is someone you have to account for more so than a backup. But boy, did this backup make them pay. I mean, if he's in there for a few games for Carolina, I think they can sleep well at night knowing that he's the guy that's in filling Cam's shoes.
Well, Cam Newton has a Lisfranc injury in his foot, which I'm not a doctor, but I don't know what that means. But I do know that it means he'll be out for about a month. So this is, we'll see more Kyle Allen in the weeks to come. Now, not every team they play will be as deficient on defense as Arizona is, and Arizona does not have a lot going for them. But he looked really good in his first start, too.
He did more than I think you would have asked for a backup, regardless of who they were playing.
Absolutely. And moving to another new quarterback who is no longer the backup, but he is the starter, and he proved he should be the starter this week. Daniel Jones of the New York Giants. It was not fair what they did to Eli Manning. However, the result that Jones provided was enough to say, okay, maybe it was the right decision. He was 23 for 36, 336 yards, two passing touchdowns, two rushing touchdowns, led the New York Giants back from a deficit to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 18 points. They won 32 to 31. It was good. It was a very good performance from a guy who I don't think will put this in week out. But for his first game to put up these kind of numbers, and the way he did it too, no Saquon Barkley. He got injured in the first half, missed the rest of the game. He will be out for pretty much half the season. Odell Beckham is no longer there, obviously. So with Sterling Shepard and Evan Ingram, basically the only main pieces at his disposal, he put on a show.
Yeah, I'm still not sold, though. He did play well. He played well. But I'm looking at, first of all, you're playing a Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense that is anything but impressive.
Yeah, their defense.
It's really not a good defense. It wasn't a good defense last year. It's a worse defense this year.
Their pass defense, I think, was the worst in the league last year.
The final score of the game was 32-31 because of two missed extra points and a missed field goal as time expired by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So, not taking anything away from Daniel Jones, but this probably should not have been a win for the Giants.
You're probably right in that regard.
The Buccaneers, one way or another, should have found a way to win this game just through better kicking.
The funny thing is about the Buccaneers kicker, Bruce Arians took a delay of game penalty in the fourth quarter because he thought that his kicker would be better from 5 yards further away. Now, I'm not a kicker in the NFL. It's a very tough position. It's a very cutthroat position. But I would bet that 99% of them would probably say, please let me kick it closer to the uprights, unless it's like 19 yards.
That's what I was going to say. If he's kicking it like straight up in the air, then, yeah, sure, back him up, but
It was like 20-some yarder, maybe 30 yards.
I think, yeah.
And he took the extra five for whatever reason, and it just went wide right at the end. I mean, Jameis Winston played well in this game. He did all he could. Mike Evans had a career game for whatever reason. The Giants have a terrible defense. The Buccaneers have a terrible defense. It was a lot of points scored. But Jones did what he needed to do to get the job done, and while he will not do this every week, that's a fact, it certainly gives the Giants more hope, I think, than they have had or would have had Eli still been the quarterback. Even if Eli Manning did something similar to this, I don't think they would feel the same way that they feel now with Daniel Jones doing this.
See, now, honestly, I feel a little bit differently. I kind of would prefer at this stage, because of the Barkley injury, to have Eli. Because the way I'm looking at it, you talked about the wide receiver core that is not strong, the lack of weapons there. Saquon Barkley is a guy that you have to game plan for, which opens up some options for Daniel Jones. Having a quarterback starting his second ever NFL football game with really no weapons on offense now, I mean, this whole thing's going to have to go through him without one of the best running backs in football in the backfield with him. That makes me a little bit nervous that he could be exploited against some better defense, which is exactly the kind of thing that I think they're better off avoiding by having Eli Manning in the game. Maybe he'll prove me wrong because, like as you've said, he played well in this game and did what he needed to do to get them to a victory. But I'm concerned that with the Barkley injury, exactly what you don't want to have happen with your future franchise quarterback is what's going to happen.
See, here's the way I look at it. The Giants are a very bad football team. They will not win more than five games. I think mostly everybody can agree on that fact. However, you can lose, you know, 10, 11, 12 games with Eli Manning, but I think having Jones in there has that glimmer of hope for you that, you know, if we lose with Eli, what's the use? You know, we're not gaining anything from this. However, if Jones is able to, he won't do this every week, like I said, but if he's able to grow a little bit through the season, you know, build a better rapport with his receivers, who, once again, not the best. Evan Ingram is a good tight end. Sterling Shepard's an okay receiver. Saquon is a good receiver, but he will be out, like I said. So even if he's on the team all these weeks getting the losses, he's at least helping learn. He is a quarterback for the future. I think it's just overall good for them regardless of the outcome. Now, unless he goes out there and goes like 10 for 40 with like five interceptions, that's a whole different story. But what he showed this week, I think, is enough to prove that he deserves to get, you know, more chances throughout the rest of the season that I think he will be given as well.
I think it either goes really well or it goes really poorly. I'm concerned it'll go really poorly. I still think he'd benefit from being behind Eli, but if it goes well, you know you have your guy. Regardless, he's getting reps, so it's a long-term game. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we will. One last thing about the NFL, I have a question for you. Bigger surprise, Steelers and Broncos being 0-6 combined, or the Bills and Lions being 5-0-1 combined?
Steelers and Broncos. Because I had both of those teams finishing above 500. I had the Steelers at 10-6, and I had the Broncos at 9-7. Obviously, you know how much I like the Lions, and I believe in the Bills enough that I'm not shocked that, given who they've played, that they're at 3-0. Certainly, it's the fact that the Denver Broncos have been winless, and the fact that the Steelers look incompetent.
Yeah, well, the Denver defense looks incompetent, too. They're the first team in over 50 years to go the first three games without a sack or a turnover.
And that's coming with a head coach that led the Chicago Bears defense last year, and a defense that was already good.
Bradley Chubb and Von Miller, I think, are the best edge rush duo that any team has in the league. You, as an opposing quarterback, you don't want to see those guys rushing you, but I guess this season is just an anomaly. I don't know. Either way, some interesting things have happened in the NFL through 3 weeks. Hopefully, some of these teams like the Steelers and Broncos can pick up some wins this week. But if they don't, it'll be great content for us next week. We are done with the NFL for this week, but we will take a quick break coming up. We have more MLB talk because the season is getting right down to the wire. So please stay tuned.
Speak up, dying in the bathroom floor.
Welcome back to Sports Takeover, Matt and Chris. We're going to move into baseball now because we are less than a week away from the regular season coming to a conclusion. Sunday will be the last day, and then Tuesday will be the AL wildcard game. So we'll talk about that a little bit because obviously it will be played before we're back on the air.
Unfortunately.
Really, though, right now, as things are shaping up and, sort of finalizing themselves, the only thing that I think is really, really entertaining and really down to the wire is the American League wildcard race.
As it's really been for the last month, too. So currently, as it stands, Oakland is the top wildcard. They barely have a game lead right now over the Rays for the second. And the Rays have a half game up on the Indians. So there is no margin for error. The Indians are four back of the Twins. So technically they do have a chance at the Central. However, just given the fact that the nature of the way the team's been playing, plus the fact that the Twins are currently playing the Tigers, who are god awful.
Worst team in baseball.
And this weekend they'll play. I don't even know who they're playing this weekend. Either way, the Indians are playing the Nationals this weekend, which will be one of our picks later. That's a very tough team for the Indians to play. However, the Twins, I don't think, are playing a team that's in playoff contention. So they essentially have that division wrapped up. It's not finalized yet, but they pretty much need to lose out. The Indians need to win out. I don't think it'll happen.
Right, and that's what it comes down to, even regardless of what the matchups necessarily are. When you have five games left to play and you need to make up four games, I mean, that's a lot to ask. And when you go to the National League side of things, you're looking at a Cubs team and a Mets team that are about roughly five games back of a wild card spot, again with five games to play. Is there a way that they get in? There is. Are they going to? No. Philadelphia is eliminated. They're not going to get in. The Diamondbacks, who we threw around here and there, certainly are eliminated as well. Really, it looks like it's just the Nationals and the Brewers. The Brewers have an outside shot at getting to the Cardinals in the Central, but it more than likely, it looks like we're just trying to find out who's going to host that wild card game.
Yeah, the Cubs, they forgot how to play
baseball. Oh, my goodness.
They turned it off at the wrong point of the season. As it currently stands, they have a seven-game losing streak. They are now 82-75. They were 82-68 and looking like they were possibly getting ready to host a wild card. They were not very far behind the Nationals.
Honestly, when they had a series at Wrigley this past weekend with the Cardinals, which you and I picked, I mean, at that point,
Poorly, we picked.
Sure, we did, because I don't think either of us expected the Cubs to get swept
in four games
at home at this juncture of the season. But I mean, you figure if they take three of those games, or if they sweep, if they totally flip those tables, we're talking about the Cubs to maybe win the division. But because they got swept, we're looking at the Cubs to miss the playoffs entirely. And when you go into Pittsburgh and lay an egg, that's a pretty good sign.
Against the Pirates team that was swept over the weekend by the Brewers, who you're in direct competition with. So while the Cubs are trying to figure out what the heck is going on, the Brewers are just saying, no Christian Yelich, no problem. We're just going to go and play every team we want and just do whatever we want. They currently have a five-game win streak, 9-1 in their last 10. Like you said, they have an outside shot at the division. I don't think it's going to happen.
Outside, it's a stretch.
They're three games behind St. Louis. It's very tough for them to find three games when there's only five games left. Possible, but not likely. However, they have a very strong chance at the wild card. They're one game behind the Nationals. The Nationals have been playing well recently, but currently the Nationals play the Phillies, which was a good team. It's a above 500 team, and the Brewers are currently playing the Reds, which are below 500. For the weekend, the Brewers will be playing the Rockies, who they have gone 2-2 in their first four games with. The Indians will be playing the Nationals, which they have not played yet this season, but the Indians are a strong team, so there's no guarantee the Nationals will handle that series. There's more likely that the Brewers will do better against the Rockies than the Nationals will against the Indians, so there's a lot to be happening in this NL wildcard, but we need to formally apologize to the Brewers. A few weeks ago, Christian Yelich fouled a ball off his kneecap, unfortunately, you know, ending his season effectively. We said, all right, the Brewers are a team that we can, I think, you know, cut out from this big NL wildcard pie.
Yeah, at that point, they were, what, three back, four back, something like that?
They were about four back.
They were kind of in the thick of things with the Mets and Phillies and teams like that.
And the Diamondbacks. All of them were around the same way out. And since that time, they have said, we don't need you, Christian Yelich. Thanks for everything you've done for us, but we're going to play better than when we had you on the team, which is
mind-blowing.
I clearly don't have the words to express how I feel about it, because what can you possibly say about it? Run differential is just such a silly stat in MLB because it exists and it means absolutely nothing, apparently. So the Cardinals have the same run differential as the Cubs. They're both scored 104 more runs than they've given up. The Cardinals have 8 more wins for whatever reason, because that's the way baseball works. The Brewers have given up exactly as many runs as they have scored, so you would expect them to be 500, yes?
Yeah, by that logic.
However, they are 17 games above 500. They have 87 wins, so they are right between the Cardinals and Cubs for no reason. The Reds have a negative 4-run differential, which isn't too bad. You expect them to be right around 500. However, they are 73-84 because run differential just makes absolutely no difference, I guess.
Those are interesting numbers. I mean, I guess throughout the course of 162 games, you get blowouts one way or the other, and they come out a certain way, and that's where you get that run differential from. But yeah, you would think that just because there's such an odd gap between those run differentials, like it's not like it's 30 here, 30 there. I mean, you're looking at a pretty significant gap, and those teams being out of order when you look at it that way. So that's interesting to say.
Yeah, and if you look at the... It's just really the NL Central, too. If you look at the rest of the league, the
probably makes a little more sense.
The Phillies are one game above 500. They have a negative run differential. Every other single team that has a positive run differential is above 500. Every team that has a negative run differential is below 500. Yet the NL Central is the anomaly where the Brewers and the Brewers and the Reds just don't care what your runs mean. And honestly, the Cubs even do as well. There's an expected win-loss on MLB standings page based upon your run differential, which the Cubs and Cardinals should be tied. Yet, 8 games separates them because that's just the nature of things. This weekend, there are some less than important matchups. The Rays will be playing the Blue Jays, who they've gone 12-4 against. That's very good for their wild card chances. The A's are playing the Mariners, who they've gone 8-7 against, which is probably not as good as they would have hoped, but they still have the better record. As we said, Indians play Nationals, so... As far as the AL wildcard goes, the Indians have, I think, the toughest path in, and I think they've had the toughest path in. They currently sit on the outside looking in, and they have the hardest team to play this weekend.
Yes, I would agree that they have the toughest path at this point. I think Tampa Bay is sitting in a good spot.
They're sitting very pretty.
They do have the Yankees, I believe,
yeah, they're finishing the series against the Yankees.
So that's a little bit tougher. But man, this is going to be exciting. I mean, there's a lot that's already sort of determined and in place, but this is going to be exciting. You've got 3 teams for 2 spots, and I mean, you could have anything from what it is right now to the Indians jumping up and hosting a wild card game while the A's miss entirely. Like,
possible.
Everything is so close. These 3 teams are closer than any 2 teams in any division.
Yeah, that's yep.
Which is makes for some very exciting baseball, and I believe you predicted at some point that there would be a game 163. That is very much in the picture as well.
It's extremely
that we can talk
right
about
now.
Matchups all we want to, and by the end of the season, what it actually comes down to is that one game to get yourself to one game to get yourself to a best of 5 series. So these teams have a lot to play for, and essentially the playoffs start right now. I mean, the playoffs really started probably a couple weeks ago for these teams because of how close it is.
And if you look at last year, there were 2 game 163s. Both came in the NL. The Rockies played the Dodgers. Dodgers won. They took the division. The Cubs played the Brewers. Brewers won. They took the division. So the Cubs and the Rockies were the wild card matchup. Cubs lost to the Rockies in that game. Rockies ended up losing to the
Brewers, I believe.
Well, yeah, they lost to the Brewers. So that really didn't make that much a difference, but
there's a lot at stake here.
There's so much at stake. Well, if you look last year, the Cubs had the potential to be the top team in the entire National League. They lost to the Brewers. They lost to the Rockies in the wild card game. If they had beaten the Brewers, they could have not worried about the wild card game and had
the National League would have gone through them.
It would have, yeah. It was a whole different dynamic. Instead, it ran through the Brewers, who the Dodgers were able to oversee. But the Dodgers could have very well lost to the Rockies and had to play the extra wild card game, had to play the Brewers sooner. So in a game, in a league where you have 162 games, we've talked about this before, it comes down to a potential game 163 just for your potential chance to come into a playoff series is not the conventional way I think most people would think that would happen.
It's exciting.
It's exciting,
but it doesn't
sure.
seem totally right, and it's one thing when, sure, the difference between being the top seed and being in the wild card game is a huge difference, but, I mean, this year you're looking at the difference between being in the wild card game and not being in the postseason at all, which I think most would argue is a bigger difference. So, I mean, the stakes are very high, and unfortunately it could come down to one game from a fairness perspective, but from an entertainment perspective, keep it as close as possible.
Yeah, in the NL, I don't think... I mean, it's possible for every team to have at least 90 wins, but Milwaukee or Washington will most likely... One of them will have about 89 wins. Currently, they have 87. So it's potential for them to get 90. However, in the American League, it is guaranteed that a team will have at least 93 wins and not make a wild card game, which it's...
That just speaks to how good the top of the American League is.
Yeah, there's, I think, an extreme parity between the very best and the very worst.
Oh, yeah.
So there are currently five teams who have at least 100 losses. The Orioles are 52 and 106. The Royals are 58 and 100. The Tigers, my goodness, 46 and 110. And the Marlins are 55 and 102. I can't remember the last time. Usually we don't see teams get 100 losses, maybe one a year. When is the last time you've seen five have 100 losses? Four? Four, I can't count, sorry. Four teams have 100 losses. That's just mind-blowing. And on the flip side of it, the Yankees and the Astros both have 102 wins. Only one of them is going to get to be the top seed, too. So you're going to see a team in the AL have over 100 wins and not even be potentially the host and come the championship series. The Dodgers have 100 wins. The Braves do need to go 4-0 to have 100 wins, but they still have the opportunity to. The Twins just need three more wins to have 100, so we could see up to five teams with 100 wins. There's just extreme parity right now.
The Dodgers have clinched the top spot in the National League, by the way, going into the postseason. But yes, the fact that we've got so many unbelievably good teams at the top and so many unbelievably bad teams at the bottom is kind of odd, and you would like to see that gap shrink. It just makes things a little bit more entertaining throughout the summer. But certainly there are some good battles, and I guess honestly that's one that we haven't mentioned and I hadn't really thought about until just now. The race for the top spot in the American League, in my opinion, is going to be the difference between who represents the American League in the World Series. When we make our picks next week on the show for the playoffs, I will pick whoever is that top spot because I think home field is that important when those two teams are that even and that good.
I don't even think it's home field that's important. I think it's the fact that whoever's the top team does not have to play the Twins.
That's because a very fair point.
The
yes.
Twins are not taken lightly. They have scored 910 runs. I believe it's either them or the Yankees lead the league in home runs. One of them has. But either way, they mashed the ball. They're the first team to have more than five guys have at least 30 home runs. They are not a team to be taken lightly. So if you're the Yankees or Astros, you don't want to be playing those teams now. Not to say that Tampa Bay, Cleveland, or Oakland are not to be taken lightly, but certainly Minnesota is a more feared team at this point. They've gone 7-3 in their last 10. They are very good, and I wouldn't count out them getting a quick division series win out of the way.
Not only do you avoid the Twins, but you play a team that played in a wild card game and also maybe played in a game 163.
It's true,
so you've got some rest, and you've got a team that has some top pitchers that have been used or some bench guys who have played games that your bench guys haven't
very
had to play. So there's a lot of different layers to this, and I think that obviously the wild card race is going to be the most important because that's the difference between getting in and not getting in. But the battle for the top spot in the AL, absolutely huge.
At this point next week, we'll know where everybody is. But as it stands right
now,
so
exciting.
There's a lot up in the air. Really, the only thing that's set is Dodgers are one, Braves are two. That's it. Everything else is still up in the air. What is not up in the air, though, are the fact that we cannot make quick picks very well. But hey, we'll give it another go because why not? Do you have quickly on hand what we are going into this week?
Not totals. I know that I was 4-3 this past week, and you were 3-4, which is pretty much where we've been. Let me see if I can find.
I'm 14-14.
You're 14-14. I'm 13-15. So we have been extraordinarily average. Let's see if we can get some wins. Let's start in the NFL. Two undefeated teams that we talked about. The Patriots at the Bills. I said the Bills would give them a challenge. I think the Bills are going to give them a loss. I'm taking Buffalo.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a stretch, but I'm going to take Buffalo. Both have top five defenses here early in the season. Neither has played a tough team. The Patriots have showed that more in their scores than Buffalo has, but we'll go for it. Why not? Bills.
Dude, that's a bold pick. I like it. I, however, cannot bring myself to make that pick. Patriots are on their way to maybe 16-0. 14-2, I think, is certainly a strong possibility. Beating the Bills in week four is just another game where Tom Brady says, all right, 300 yards, 2-3 touchdowns, next. So I have the Patriots in this one. Chiefs-Lions, I actually had more trouble picking this one than the Patriots one. I did have to pick Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. Yes, the Lions have a good defense. Yes, they've made quarterbacks look bad, but they have not played Patrick Mahomes yet. He is just putting up every single great number this season that he did last season. He looks like the same MVP we saw last year, and I think he'll just easily take the Chiefs over the Lions in this one.
I did it again, Chris. I'm taking the
Lions.
You're
taking
the Lions. Yes, I am.
You're going wild this week, man.
They're at home. The Chiefs almost lost at Arrowhead last week to Baltimore. I like the Lions much more than I like the Ravens, and at home instead of Arrowhead is huge. Give me Detroit. Vikings at Bears. This is one that I think will be a season split. I'm going to go with the Bears simply because they're the home team. I think these two teams are pretty even, but I'm going to go with the Bears since it's in Chicago.
Yeah, I have the Bears written down here, but I got to look at my pick'em real quick to see if I actually did it. No, okay. I had the Bears written down here. However, when I did my pick'em earlier today, I picked the Vikings. The Vikings are who I want to pick. So I'm going to go with the Vikings in this one because Dalvin Cook looks so good this season. The Bears have looked bad besides this week, but they play the Redskins, and that's not a real team, so we're going to ignore them. The Vikings have just looked really good. I have the Vikings. We have three different picks already. I like this a lot.
Somebody's getting wins somewhere.
Moving into college, number 18, Virginia, travels to South Bend to play number 10, Notre Dame. I'm going with the Cavaliers in this one. I think Notre Dame's going to incur two losses in a row. It's hard to come back from a tough defeat against Georgia. Virginia looks good this season. I got the Cavaliers.
Things are getting crazy here in quick picks. I'm going to stick with Notre Dame. Woo! I certainly think they're the better team here. They played a very good Georgia team tough last week. Virginia's played some weak teams pretty close, so I'm going to go with Notre Dame. Number 21, USC, is traveling to number 17, Washington. I'm going with Washington. I don't trust USC. We talked about that earlier. They're on their third quarterback. Washington's who I had winning the conference. I'll take Washington.
USC's third quarterback led them against the number 10 Utah Utes last week. I think he will lead them against the number 17 Washington Huskies this week. I couldn't even tell you the kid's name. It's Fink. I don't remember. Matt Fink, maybe? I don't know. Either way, I believe Slovis is still out this week, so the third string is going to give another go. USC just has some kind of character this year. I don't know why. They'll probably lose to an unranked team later, but I think the ranked teams they got down to is science. I have the Trojans in this one. Number 24, Kansas State, travels to the unranked Oklahoma State, who is effectively a ranked team. They were receiving
like 27. Yeah.
They're receiving votes. Kansas State's undefeated. Oklahoma State has one loss, who was a good loss to Texas last week. I'm going with Oklahoma State in this one. They play Texas very strongly, very well. The game is at home. I just like the Cowboys in this one.
I have the Cowboys as well. 40-plus in all of their wins so far. Texas struggled last week, a 30-36 victory. That was Kansas State against Texas. I'm going to go with Oklahoma State.
Finally, one we have the same.
Yeah. Now we move to baseball. Indians at Nationals. I still can't pick baseball right. I'm going to try it again with the Nationals. Anthony Rendon's my guy. He's the one I'm calling for MVP. I think he'll step it up. I'm going with the team that has exceeded the expectations that I had for them. That's the Nationals. I'll take Washington.
Yeah, I think Indians have been the odd team out in the wildcard picture for the last month. Tough battle against the Nationals this week. The Nationals, who knocked Bryce Harper and the Phillies out of playoff contention today. Kudos to you, Washington. You did it when nobody, including myself, believed in you. I'm going to pick the Nationals this weekend as well. I think they just have what it takes. They will be able to take the number one wild card away from the Brewers, and the Indians, I think, will be stuck on the outside looking in. That's quick picks. Moving into bold predictions, I'm going to stay in the MLB. So there's not really a lot of good bold predictions to make in the MLB, so I kind of went out there for this one.
Oh, boy.
There's three games left for every team this weekend. So that means there are, 45 games between Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Amongst those 45 games, at least one team will score 16 runs in one of those games. We don't really see high scores of that nature. Why are you frowning over there, Matt?
I'm not frowning. This is just keep going. This is interesting.
So, while we don't see scores exactly above 16 quite too often, I think the Pirates are a good team to give the other team 16 runs. So, some team in the MLB is going to get 16 runs this week. Why not?
Okay, interesting one. I'll go with Major League Baseball as well. Like I said, we will not be on the air until the American League wildcard game has been played.
Boo.
So we'll predict it. I think it's going to be the Rays over the Athletics. And just to add to the prediction, I'm going to say that makes the playoff matchups in the American League Astros versus Rays, Yankees versus Twins. I think the matchups like we talked about are going to be what keeps the Indians out of the playoffs, out of the wildcard game. I like Tampa Bay's pitchers when you need one pitcher to win you one game. So I'm going to go Rays over A's and then Astros, Rays, Yankees, Twins as the playoff matchups.
Okay, I can see that. If there's a team I want in a one-game playoff, Indians have really good pitching too. However,
they're not getting there, though.
You don't think they're getting there. Yeah, that's a good one. I like it. I'm going to move to college football. Bunch of college games this weekend. At least one of them is going to go to triple overtime. That's it.
Okay,
that's all I got.
Hey, I like that. NFL, last unbeaten team, I'm going to go with the Rams, especially if my picks this week for the Patriots and Chiefs to both go down. If those both happen,
right. That
really opens the door for the Rams. So regardless, I'm going with the Rams.
I have a kind of an undefeated pick as well. At least two teams in the NFL will make it to 6-0. That's three more weeks of football to be undefeated through, which currently have eight teams that, okay, I guess the Lions could technically go 5-0-1 for this pick as well. I hadn't considered that, but it would apply.
Unbeaten through week six.
Yes, after six games, there will be at least two teams who are unbeaten. We have eight. That number's going to get cut by two at least this week, unless there's two ties, which won't happen. But theoretically, it'll get cut by two this week. So by week six, two teams, 6-0.
I'm going to the Jacksonville Jaguars for the final bold prediction. Oh, Gardner Minshew is the guy. He's going to be the franchise quarterback for the Jaguars moving forward.
Wow.
I predicted at the end of, well, when Nick Foles signed last year, that he would be the next Brock Osweiler in the sense that he would not be the starter by the end of the season. I think Gardner Minshew is going to make sure that that's what happens. It just seems like this is one of those guys that the more you talk about him and the more you learn about him, the legend just grows.
The weirder he gets.
I read on Tuesday that he considered breaking his hand with a hammer in college so he could redshirt. Dude's insane.
No, the whole story to that is he had like a bottle of Jack or whatever, drank a little bit of it, hit his hand with a hammer three times and said, "I can't go through with breaking my hand." But
he considered it. He had the hammer
right there.
The man's insane. The mustache is catching on everywhere. He's going to be the guy in Jacksonville moving forward.
I think he's good for football. Even if he's not a great quarterback for Jacksonville or for the league, he is certainly good for football. And he brings hope to Jacksonville.
I'm on the Gardner Minshew train at this point.
Sure, why not?
That's all the time that we have. It's been fun as always. Thank you for tuning in. Chris and I will be back at the same time next week. Until then, good night, everybody.